dilapidated farms, double wides, swimming holes, overgrown yet still beautiful fields. People caught in the backwaters of rural Vermont populate the terrific debut collection of short fiction by writer Robin MacArthur. Her new book is Half Wild, and Robin MacArthur joins me now. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks so much for having me.
Let's start with a little reading from the story, The Women Where I'm From. Hannah has just returned home from Seattle to New England at her mom's request. Her mom has a health crisis. Mom and daughter are on the porch finishing up dinner.
The porch, like the rest of the house, is a mess. Newspapers and books and cast-off sweaters coating every surface. She sits in a vinyl-covered glider. I sit in the lemon-colored 200-year-old rocker she nursed me in until I was five. My mother puts her bowl down and picks up a pack of American Spirits. Mind? Of course. Too bad, she says, winking. My evening ritual. She lights a cigarette, closes her eyes, leans back into her chair, and starts talking. She says she's been ripped off twice this year. 2 months ago, she tells me, a young man wandered up the driveway looking for a place to stay, so she gave him a sleeping bag and offered him the hayloft. In the morning, she discovered the sleeping bag and the cash from her wallet were gone.
Robin, many characters in this collection love the land, the place where they live, their homes, but they also feel a little trapped by home. Family ties are tested by these conflicting desires to stay or leave. Talk about that a little.
Yeah, well, so I live on the piece of land that my grandparents settled in the 1940s in Vermont. And I grew up deep in the woods in a house that my parents had built themselves. And all of my neighbors were extended family. I had aunts and uncles and cousins. And so really this book is in some ways my own processing of that love-hate relationship with this place where I grew up, where I have deep ties. And I left, you know, I went to college. I then lived in Philadelphia and New York City and traveled a fair amount, but was always tethered, like a lot of the characters in these stories. It was a place that I couldn't ever fully leave and always wanted to return to, and yet returning is complicated.
Mm. And each of your stories stab holes in that bucolic fall foliage and maple sugar cliche of New England. I mean, you write about people who are eking out a living any way they can, people who drink and smoke too much, people who are weighted down by secrets and those conflicting desires to stay or to
mm-hmm.
go.
Yeah, you know, another thing that compelled me to write these stories, I went to Brown. So I left this kind of deep woods Vermont upbringing and I went to Brown University. And everybody I met said, I love Vermont. I have a ski home there, or I love summering there, or I love Ben and Jerry's. And I realized that, you know, Vermont has such an iconic place in our cultural story as this bucolic Vermont life, picturesque landscape, and yet it's a much more complex place. There's a lot of poverty, and because there are so many tourists and second home residents, there's an inherent clash, an ever-present clash between the haves and the have-nots and newcomers and people who have been around for generations.
You've written on your blog about the life of a writer, which sounds at times a little like some of your characters. I mean, living hand-to-mouth, working several jobs. It seems like the kind of existence that wears on you.
Yeah, well, my husband and I are very lucky right now. We are making it work. We are musicians, and now that I have books coming out, I'm making a little money doing this. But I have cleaned houses. I've worked on my mom's farm. My husband has built houses, and we've just worked all sorts of odd jobs over the years, which is really what most people who live in Vermont end up doing. It's a place where you choose your location over your career, for the most part. And so you find a place that you want to live, and then you figure out a way to make a living.
In the story God's Country, you look at racism through an older woman who slowly realizes her grandson may be part of a white supremacist group. Let's hear part of that story.
Mm-hmm. Her husband, Fred, was a racist. She knows that now, only it was the Vietnamese who killed his son and the Italians who worked in the quarries he didn't like. There weren't any black people here then, at least that she knew of. Now when Cora goes to Nelson for her grocery shopping, she is surprised how many different colored people she sees, Chinese and blacks and Mexicans, or people she thinks are Chinese and Mexican, though maybe they're from somewhere else. Whatever the case, they're all there in Nelson, the little mill town by the river, living in the houses where the mill workers used to live, tossing groceries into their carts, the kids begging for this or that, just like any kids.
How much of that story reflects your own growing up and experience from your own family there in Vermont?
The story, I wrote it because this was a real incident that sadly happened in the town that borders my town. There were a bunch of billboards or pieces of plywood put up along back roads with racist comments on them. I don't know the details of who put those signs up. I do know that when I was in high school, there were always a few pickup trucks with Confederate flags in the back window. So this was my way of just addressing Vermont's covert and overt racism, which has been here for a long time, like, and simmers as it does in many rural places. Again, this is me unpacking the vision that we have of Vermont as this lily white kind of idealist state, which has wonderful ideals as a state, but it is too white. It does allow this festering racism to grow and appear in ugly ways.
The people who leave Vermont in your stories always seem to have trouble staying away, as we've talked about. In The Women Where I'm From, Hannah's mother asks at one point if she's, you know, really glad to be home. Can you read her response?
Right. So her mother says, "Are you really glad to be here? You know, I thought you might hate it here." And Hannah says, "How could I? I look across the fields at the barns and the gardens and the ochre shadows of the trees. At the bottom of the hill, I can see the roof of Christie's double wide, the tin roof glaring white with sun. Inside, her mom, I know, is drinking coffee and watching reruns of Twin Peaks. I don't hate it here. I hate what happens to me when I am here. I hate the way it draws me in, the way it leads to nowhere but itself, the way everyone and everything is connected and a person cannot be free. It's too beautiful to hate it here," I say.
Robin, explain that feeling a little bit. Everything is connected and a person cannot be free. You're raising two children in Vermont.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us what message you have for them.
Yeah. You know, I think it's one of the main reasons I am raising them there. You know, I grew up in a house that was off-grid. Our electricity came from the sun. My parents grew most of our food. Our wood heat came from the trees in our backyard. So there's this interconnection with the natural world that I really want my children to grow up knowing deep in their bones, and also to know a community. You know, my dad used to drive me around back roads as a kid, and like many of the characters in this book, he would point out what land used to belong to who and why they sold it. And I think when we move to new places where we don't have that historical context, we lose out on a lot of the story of how people are displaced and how history reverberates. And so I definitely want to live with that, and I want my children to know that. It's also a little crazy. One has to be bold to move back to your hometown and then to write a book about your hometown while also living in that hometown. I might be truly crazy.
Strange looks at the local store.
Strange looks, yes. And I think I'll be doing a lot of defending of my parents for the next few years, letting everybody know which characters are not my parents in this book.
You're not only a writer, you and your husband have a band. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so for the past 10 years, we have had a band called Red Heart the Ticker, and we are just releasing our fourth album, and the songs have these themes that run back and forth between them. There's some catamounts and mountain lions in the album, and one of the choruses of one of the songs is "Greetings from Fierce New England," which I think is a pretty good description of the New England that I'm painting a picture of in the book as well.
Robin MacArthur's debut collection of fiction is Half Wild. It's out today. Robin, thanks for speaking with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Are you still lonesome? Are you still handsome? Are you still breathing and greetings from fierce New England?
You're listening to Letter from Mount Philo from Red Heart the Ticker's new album, Tigers of the New England Forest. This is Here and Now.